Let's do it.
Radio.
Oh yeah. I said, oh yeah. Oh, 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 oh. It's Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and a crew coming to you live. Got another great show today. We got Dr. Bruce. We're recapturing the African mind for willingness. Come on. Come on, join us, y'all. Call the family. Family time. And there's no better love. Oh, yeah. No better love. Welcome, welcome, welcome one, welcome all to the Empowerment Hour. Well, it's more than an hour, but you know. It's African American Empowerment. It's 365 days of it. You're probably asking yourself, what is it? Right? First of all, it is call a friend, right? If you black in America, right, or live in one of them islands, right? Call somebody and tell them you need to listen to this show because we're trying to recapture our minds, right? We're trying to be positive, peaceful, and productive. We're trying to help our people help themselves, right? So when somebody say about African Americans specifically, oh, they don't want to do this. They don't want to work. They don't want to improve. They don't. We do. How about that? We do, and we're going to. All we're trying to do is get our people to coalesce, to come together, to work on ourselves and do the work, right? Getting out of the way so that we can begin to do the work of changing ourselves one individual at a time. So we're doing the Recapturing the African Mind series with Dr. Bruce. But let me speak to the mission of the National African American Empowerment Association. The goal and the mission is to ensure that the needs of the African-American community are met through the development of programs and services that inspire, motivate, and empower each member. That's you and me, each person, right? But that person could be out on the street. We need to be able to help our people up. Hand out, help up, right? That's it. Reach on out, help somebody up. And if we pull each other up, not down, pull each other up and continue to work with each other and collaborate, to partner, right, with community-based organizations, right? Our HBCUs and our people that are on the ground working diligently for change. And for us over here, we're using the peace concept. That peace concept is simple. P is politics. We need a political agenda, right? We need to focus on local politics, national politics, and state politics, wherever you are. You need to be able to be astute at understanding the American political system. You do. And when you get that part done, right, and that includes the law enforcement and all the laws, right, you got to understand the system that we live in. Then we have to move on over to economics, right, get an economic platform, an economic agenda where we understand money, right? This is critical. Understand the use of money and how it works, how capitalism works. Right, how the economic system works in America, and then how to use that system to be able to benefit your family, your children, and your community, that we have the much-needed resources to survive, right? Not be struggling and scrambling, because there's enough out here for all of us. We know how to work it. Next is the A. This is for you. The A is athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. Just get a basic program, right? Develop a basic routine of when you're going to do something for your body, right? And then looking at what you put in it, and then most importantly, taking care of your mental health, right? Your health is your wealth, not only your physical health, but your mental health as well. Reducing stress, right? Taking care of yourself and becoming the best person that you can be in the process. And then there's culture, right? Relevant cultural programs like this one that educate, 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 give information to our people, give programs and activities that inspire our people, chin out, chest up, particularly our young people, that they can be proud of who they are whenever they walk the streets of any city, town, or state in this country. And then lastly, it's education, right? A comprehensive education that really looks at how to utilize these concepts and more to get our people on the road to recovery and healing, right? We have to do this. We have to resurrect our people, promote and develop and instill pride, dignity, integrity, and respect and love for self and kind. And when we do that, there is no way that we can lose.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Stan is so right, right? We have to be able to create institutions. Those institutions are going to have to be created by us that support us, by us, for us. And we have to do the work of doing that work on ourselves. No other community or culture can do that for you. You got to do that for yourself. And so it's about African-American empowerment, 365 days as we continue to repair and restore and take ourselves back to our rightful place on this planet. All right, now we're going over to Brother George for the Willie Lynch Kwanzaa segment. Come on, brother. Oh, yeah. Do it. Hey. Hey, mama.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. Brother George.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Welcome to the... Yes, sir. Coming in loud and clear.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I'm operating on the move. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm on the move today. That's why I wanted to make sure that that I was clearly heard. Today, brother, our Kwanzaa principle is Kuumba, creativity, to do always as much as we can in the way we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited it.
I like that.
Now, another definition for Kuumba itself, the term creativity, finding a new approach to something, innovation requires independent thinking and the ability to apply information in a creative way. By thinking for ourselves and allowing for the process of discovery, it becomes possible for us to conceive and create a new reality. Kuumba. Now, today's Willie Lynch segment is going to be written from a book called, I'm reading from, Understanding the Assault on the Black Man, Black Manhood, and Black Masculinity by Brother Minister Dr. Wesley Muhammad. This segment is the segment called Kill the Male, Spare the Female. Now, this is actually comes from a biblical scripture where Pharaoh, you know, wanted to try to find the baby prophet, the prophet. And so he said, if we kill all the male babies that's around that age, that's like 2 years old, then we got to get him, you know, because he's 2 years old. So kill the male, spare the female is the draconian plot that Pharaoh hatched against the children of Israel to keep them from growing in strength and power. We know that kill the male, we know what kill the male looks like. It looks like Officer Darren Wilson gunning down Michael Brown when Brown was surrendering with his hands up. It looks like Officer Timothy Loman rolling up on 12-year-old Tamir Rice while he was playing outside as a 12-year-old boy should do, and immediately gunning him down with absolutely no provocation. And then the city blames the 12-year-old black boy for his own unprovoked murder. Wilson and Loman undoubtedly represent the tip of the iceberg of the white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement that the FBI's 2006 unclassified investigation assessment report warned of. In particular, the report showed concern over the infiltration of law enforcement by so-called ghost skin, those who avoid overt displays of their beliefs of the order to blend while covertly advancing white supremacist causes. Now, it's a lot more in this book. This brother wrote a magnificent book here. And what he's saying is that even though they knew that the white supremacists were infiltrating the police forces throughout the country, and it's obvious by the way that they're killing our young kids. They're killing our kids. And he was making a point that the FBI was well aware of that. And those kinds of things we need to be well aware of, but we also need to take the initiative to educate our children on how to act. We had a meeting earlier this afternoon, and Brother Kevin made an interesting point. He said, if we know that these police officers will kill our kids, then don't go up into their faces, you know, hollering and screaming and trying to make your case at that point. Don't say anything. Just be as cooperative as possible so that you come out of there with your life. You know, so we have to learn these lessons, you know, and I think that that was one of the lessons that Brother Wesley Muhammad was trying to make with that book. So, Brother Marvin, I'm done. If you have any questions for me, if not, then we can go to Dr. Bridges.
All right. You know I got a question for you, brother. How do we get that information to our people, right? It's a pattern. It's the process, and it's been going on for a long time now, because we know that the slave catchers turned into our police force. So how do we navigate that? How do we educate our people on being able to be in a position where we're not the victims in those situations?
Brother, we're going to have to start being more responsible adults. We're going to have to start teaching lessons and not relying on the public school system to do it for us. We're going to have to start doing things, whether it's through church groups, whether it's through community groups, whether it's through civic groups. We're going to have to start taking the initiative as adults, African-Americans, black people, Moors, whatever you want to call yourself, because we're all the same thing. But we need to start starting those type of informational classes amongst our young children to teach them that far in advance before they run into that encounter. And that's my answer.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate you doing the segment. Keep up the great work. And as you know, education is the key and knowledge is power. Thank you, sir.
Thank
Bring
you,
in
brother.
Dr. Bruce. Oh, yeah.
Bring it.
What? Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bridges, are you there?
Yes, sir, Brother Marvin. Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show, brother. Welcome to the show. How are you?
All right, brother. Okay. Thank you very much, brother, for the welcome.
You're quite welcome. We've been looking forward to this week's segment of Recapturing the African Mind. We're trying to change minds. Get the book,
All right,
people.
That's good.
Get the book. Let me just say one more thing, Dr. Bruce, before I turn it over to you. 919-956-5972 is the number to call if you want to get this beautiful book in your hands so you can start reading it and disseminating it into the community and into your families. Over to you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you so much.
All right, Brother Marvin, and to Brother George, and also to Dr. Rogers from last week. We were talking last week about the roaring in of whites onto the continent of Africa, and we had talked about the word colony and colonial and how the colonial governments were being set up by Europeans as they encroached upon the soil of Africa. And now when African, and we also discussed the Berlin Conference, which was held in 1884, and that Berlin Conference that we talked about, that Berlin Conference is was a meeting at which European nations, about 14 of them thereabouts, got together and began to discuss how they were going to take control of the continent of Africa, its people, and more importantly, its resources. We discussed that on last week. Now, when these European nations went into Africa, all of them had their own methods of control of the governments in Africa, of the many states of Africa. They had the methods that they were going to control Ghana, Mali, Cameroon, Angola, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Nigeria, Togo, Benin, all the countries of Africa. They had their means that they were going to control those particular countries by. And today I'm going to discuss the methods of control that were employed by European countries over the continent of Africa, over the different countries of Africa. And the first one that we're going to discuss is British control. Now, the British initially ruled by, and we're in the book too, Recapturing the African Mind, to those who are following along and who have a copy of the book. We're actually on page 147 of the book, Recapturing the African Mind, and we're going to start talking about those mechanisms of control that the European nations employed to take to keep African countries under their feet. Okay, now the British employed a method of control called indirect rule, which meant that they sent governors from England to head those particular countries, and to there was no need to pay attention to existing tribal chiefs, customs, and traditions in those countries, because the governor was in charge. The chiefs of Ghana, the chiefs of Nigeria, or any countries that were colonized by the British, they were ruled by governors that were sent there from England. So the power of the chief was diminished. The power of the elders and the Council of African Elders, all of those particular governing bodies that we had as people, all those bodies were dissolved, and everyone reported to the governor that the British would send there, and they would exercise control over those particular colonies, of those countries. Now, while traditional laws were applied when it was convenient to do so, the ultimate law was the law handed down to the Africans in the British colonies by England. Indirect rule sounded like local autonomy or self-determination, but this was superficial at best. The system operated with the minds of Britain controlling taxation, choosing administrative officers, and setting agendas for governance. Although chiefs may have been chosen by their people, their authority was known by all to reside in the power of the British, you see. So accordingly, accordingly, the complacent form of control was instituted by the British by making Africans seem to be in control when, in fact, total control was in the hands of the British. Now, by appearance, Africans had control of their own countries, in the countries that were colonized by the British, and there were many. But the British were actually in control indirectly, you see. So this was a method of control used by the British in Africa. Now, they also, Europeans, British built colleges in Africa for Africans to go to. And last week, Dr. Rogers talked about colleges and universities, how when you look at the architects of white architects of black education, pardon me, in the United States, you would find that white people were the architects of black education. And on African, on the continent of Africa, then you had white people also who were the architects of the education of the black colleges in the countries that were conquered by the British. And due to the nature of the education, Europeans were expected to induce Africans to be more obedient to authority, and that authority was from the British, you see. So controlling the minds of Africans on the continent of Africa, as it was in the United States of America in the colleges and universities, as Dr. Rogers talked about on last week, you had whites who set the colleges and universities up, like Hampton University, Tuskegee in Alabama, Virginia State University, and Wilberforce, and other colleges that were so-called black colleges in this country. But the education was controlled by whites, so it was no different in Africa. And on the continent of Africa, Europeans went there and they set the schools up and set up the system of education, and blacks were also supposed to follow the educational dictates of the colonizer. So it's the same exact thing. So this is why we as Africans in this country and on the continent of Africa, we're out of our minds, because our minds have been controlled by an education of outsiders. Now, as a few colleges in Ghana were being formed, students' learning was going further than what they had expected. Now, in Sierra Leone, for example, Foroba College, people began to focus upon the missionary training. In Ghana, professors were encouraging students to pursue higher studies. With this spark of, and then this actually sparked anti-colonial spirit, and students traveled to London and America for education. So when African colleges and universities were established, some African graduates of high school went to school in Africa, but many of them came to America. And a good example would be Nnamdi Azikiwe, who's the first president of the country of Nigeria. Now, Azikiwe finished high school in his country of Nigeria, but then he left Nigeria and came to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania and continued his education. And with the education he received in this country, he went back and started a printing press during the time of independence. Another example of an African student finishing school in Africa and coming to America was Kwame Nkrumah. Now, Kwame Nkrumah, who was also under the British form of government in Ghana, because Ghana was colonized by the British, Kwame Nkrumah finished school in Ghana, but came to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, as did Nnamdi Azikiwe. And when Nkrumah came to this particular country, the United States of America, after graduating high school in Ghana, he came to Pennsylvania, but not only did he go to Lincoln University, but on the weekends, he would get together and go to New York and study with Dr. Ben and Dr. John Henry Clark. And then he received another kind of education outside of the education that he received in Lincoln University. So you see, with this particular knowledge from Lincoln University, and more importantly, the knowledge that he received from the African study groups that had been started by Dr. Ben and John Henry Clark, Kwame Nkrumah, upon graduation, went back to his country in Ghana and helped Ghana fight for independence. And Ghana became the first independent nation of Africa in about the year 1960 or 61, somewhere around 60 or 61. Ghana became independent and was the first African nation to become independent from European powers. And it was under the leadership of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, who came to the United States of America to study and studied under Ben, John Clark, and John G. Jackson, some of those early historians that we all know about. And he took that knowledge and went back to Ghana, organized his people, formed what was called the CCP, or the Convention's People Party, and got rid of Europeans in that country, and Ghana became independent, you see. So education is very important, and education can be used to liberate the minds of people, and therefore when the minds of people are liberated, then the actions will follow. Once the mind is liberated, then people will begin to act. Another good example, which I'll get to in just a minute, but I wanted to talk about the first form of colonialism under the British, which was called indirect rule, and that was the form of colonialism that Dr. Kwame Nkrumah came under, and also Dr. Namdi Azikiwe from Nigeria came under that particular form of rule. But they took that education from that indirect rule by the British, got the education, but used it for the advancement of their own people, which is the same thing that we should do in this country. If we get a degree or degrees, plurally, from the United States of America, from the colleges and universities here, then we should take that particular degree and cause it to work for ourselves and for the betterment for us as a people. Now, the next form of education, I mean the form of governance by Europeans I'm going to discuss is the form of government by the French. And the French form of government was called assimilation. To those who may be taking notes, the French form of government was called assimilation. I want to spell it for those who might be taking notes. Now, just to go back over for a minute, the British form of government in its African colonies was called indirect rule, but the French colonies, or the colonies that were controlled by France, were called assimilation, A-S-S-I-M-I-L-A-T-I-O-N, assimilation. So the doctrine of France towards its African colonies was assimilation. Now, the French believed that civilization should be shared by every single person living under French rule. They were desirous of creating an overseas France. Now, let me explain what that means. The French in France, on the continent of Europe, the French, they wanted to create an overseas France. In other words, everywhere the French armies and the government went, they wanted to make the people that they came into contact with Frenchmen, an overseas France, not on the actual soil of France on the continent of Europe, but they wanted to make their colonies in Africa and in other places too a part of France, overseas France, you see. So the goal was to totally acculturate Africans into French life. They wanted to totally acculturate Africans into French life. Now, there was a writer, a white writer, by the name of Robert July, who wrote a book called A History of the African People. And in that particular book called A History of the African People, Robert July makes this particular statement on page 317. Now, Robert July says, and by the way, this is a book that I've also used before in teaching courses at St. Augustine's College. I use this book in my African history course. But Dr. July says in his book on page 317, listen very carefully, he says that according to Robert July, that the governor of the French administration sent these orders to the colonies. These are the orders that the French administration sent to its colonies. And it goes like this. The prime mover of the new colony must be European culture driven by French energy, becoming through example, through persuasion, and through the appreciation of new achievement, the soul of the African. Now, I want you to listen to that. These were the orders sent by the governor of the French administration to the French countries in Africa, to the countries that France had conquered and colonized and brought under its rule. The orders were the prime mover of the new colony must be European culture. Now, you got to be European first. Driven by French energy, becoming through example, through persuasion, and through the appreciation of new achievements, the soul of the African. Page 317, A History of the African People by Robert July. The aim of the French in their colonies, and just so some of y'all might know, French colonies are countries in Africa like Togo, Benin, Cameroon. These are countries where you find Africans who speak French, Senegal and West Africa, where people speak French. You see, these are the French, some examples of the French colonies. The aim of the French in their colonies was to create a French-speaking African acculturated elite. These Africans would be totally immersed in French culture. Their bodies would appear African, but their minds would be French. Training would take place in French universities, and they would become familiar with French politics. I'm reading from page 149 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind. Listen very carefully. After receiving French education, one might possibly become an assimilé. One might become an assimilé. One who could become assimilated into French culture. Along with assimilation came alienation, because when you assimilated into French culture, you would become alienated from your own culture. These French Africans became wearers of French clothing and adhered to all the values of France. Their thinking, due to the policy of assimilation, became corrupt and less African. The African French elite would then become leaders in their country and would continuously inculcate French culture, politics, and values throughout their nations. You see, so the French colonies in, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in to the African American Empowerment Program this evening, and to those who possibly Brother Marvin got in touch with, some new numbers that I gave him. I hope you're listening today. I'm on page 150 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind. They wanted to make Africans become French, and that still exists even to this day. Now, on page 150, I have in my book, as we're talking about the policies employed by European nations towards their African subjects, towards their African colonies. We just talked about indirect rule, which was the standard or the policy of the British colonies. Now we're talking about assimilation, which is the standard for the French colonies in Africa. Now, I have on page 150 of my book a very interesting statement here, and it's a what I call Guadeloupe, a personal account. I had the experience of visiting the country of Guadeloupe, which is in the islands of the Caribbean. Now, Guadeloupe is a small island in the Caribbean Ocean, south of the United States of America. And Guadeloupe is an island that was conquered and colonized by the French. And this is something that I noticed when I went to Guadeloupe and I studied in Guadeloupe. On page 150 of my book, while visiting the small Caribbean island of Guadeloupe, which was colonized by the French, I had a discussion with an African cab driver at the airport. We were discussing his vacation time, and I proceeded to inquire about where he might travel. He said that his plans were to travel to France. The cab driver spoke the French language. He was trained in French history, literature, music, and the like. Moreover, he enjoyed French wine, clothing, and food, and owned a French poodle. For all practical purposes, he was a Frenchman. Now, I'm digressing for a minute. Now, I'm talking about my meeting with an African cab driver on the island of Guadeloupe. Then back to the account in my book here. My question to the cab driver was, have you ever thought about going to Africa? The precise answer by the cab driver was that Africa was too far. Now, I want y'all to think about this now. This is why, as I said earlier, I asked Brother Marvin last week, I didn't say it this week, but pull out a map, pull out your pencils, pull out your pads, and try to understand what we're talking about here now. Now, and the reason I say this is because this African cab driver who I was speaking with at the airport, who was going on vacation, and I asked him, he said he was going to France. I said, had you ever thought about going to Africa? And I'm back to the book now. The precise answer was by the cab driver that Africa was too far. Now I'm back into the book. An examination of a world map would reveal, contrary to the cab driver's assumption, France is actually further away from Guadeloupe than Africa. Now, I hope you all understand, he was from Guadeloupe, an African in Guadeloupe, just like you Africans in America. He's an African on the island of Guadeloupe, getting ready to go on vacation, and he was going to take his vacation into France. And I asked him about going to Africa, and he said that Africa was too far. But when you look at a map, you find that Africa is closer to Guadeloupe than France is. Now, back to the text in my book. The problem, of course, is that in the minds of many Africans, and even us in America, Africa has been placed so far away that we think it is impossible to reach. It was also clear while socializing in Guadeloupe that many of the French colonizers had married into the African families so that the control was still in the hands of France. France's colonial empire extended from Senegal eastward to Chad and south to the Congo. In France, all roads led to Paris, and in Africa and the islands, all roads led to France. French institutions and French culture were the order of the day. End of my own quote. Now, back to my comments about that. So while I was in Guadeloupe, to make it very clear, I went to several gatherings, parties, events on the island of Guadeloupe, and I noticed when I was speaking to some of the brothers and sisters at the party, and they would point out or introduce to me some of their uncles and aunts, they were white people. This was because the French, very strategically, when they conquered and colonized their particular colonies, whether in Africa, as we're talking about now, or in Guadeloupe, that we're talking about specifically, in Guadeloupe, they would marry into the families of African people so that if there was an uprising, then you're going to have to kill your uncle or your aunt or your grandmother or your grandfather because they were white in many cases. This was a whole process of assimilation that was employed by the French in her colonies in Guadeloupe, and also the same thing in Africa. So this, of course, to those who are studying and who want to learn, this deserves more attention. But I just want to mention that the policy of the French towards its African countries was assimilation. Now, the policy of the British towards their African colonies was indirect rule, as we're going through the policies of the European nations towards the African countries. We've covered Britain or England, which is direct rule, and now we just covered assimilation, which was a policy of the French in Africa. Now, Belgian control on page 151 in my book. Now, the Belgians in Africa, the best description of the relationship between the Congo, which was colonized by Belgium. The best description of the relationship between the Congo and its colonizer Belgium is paternalism, a term from the Latin pater, which means father. The term paternalism manifests the arrogance of the Belgians, whose leader was King Leopold, a devout Catholic. Words in the Catholic vocabulary like pope, which means papa, Papal, P-A-P-A-L, which also means Papa or Mother. This is why we call Pope the Holy Father. Mother Superior, Mother Superior. When you go to Catholic schools, the nuns, that was a Mother Superior and Mother this and Father that. This was a system of paternalism, which was a system employed by Belgium in its control of her African colonies. Now, and all of these words suggest positions of the Catholics, not only in relation to each other, but even more so in relation to the African converts. Consequently, this paternalistic manner in which Belgium related to Africans in the Congo was influenced by their Catholic religion. Unlike the French, Belgians had no plans of making Belgian Africans. Now, the French wanted to make French Africans, but Belgium had no plans to do that. Instead, they wanted to tutor them into the ways of the West as a father rears his children. So this was a policy of paternalism by Belgium and its African colonies. You see, make them bow down to you. Make them call the Pope Father. Make them call the nuns Mother and Mother Superior, and make them become your children. And so we become little children to the Catholics. And I talked about a little earlier, while I was a student at North Carolina Central University in a sociology class, which had its professor a Catholic, the students at NCCU were referring to him as Father this and Father that, and how that sounded terrible to me, you see. But this came from that paternalistic policy of Belgium towards Africa and towards its African subjects, and it's the same thing in this country even today. Today, Father this and Father this and Mother this and Mother that, Father Superior, and those kinds of things. And during colonialism, Rudyard Kipling's idea of the white man's burden was manifested in the Belgian Congo in its purest form. The Belgians, like other European counterparts, believed that civilization should be brought to those areas where darkness reigned. And of course, Belgium and other colonizers cloaked civilization with Christianity. So the Belgian policy was to make us become their children and to become, and for them to become our parents. So that was the policy of the Belgium in the Congo. Now, as we go through these policies before we end, we're going to look at another policy by the European colonizers in Africa. And one reason that this is important, because when you meet people from certain countries in Africa, you can understand them better because of their upbringing. You will know how they were taught. Now, Portuguese control was called exploitation. The control by Portugal was called exploitation. The similarities between the colonial policies of Portugal and Belgium are striking. As in the Congo, Catholic missionaries had a favored status over Protestant missionaries in Angola and Mozambique, since Angola and Mozambique were colonized by the Portuguese, most of whom were Catholic. You see, there was a colonial philosophy which embodied the Colonial Act of 1930, and special provisions were made for the activities of Catholic missions in Angola and in Mozambique. Now, the policy here was carried out like this. In Angola, which was a Portuguese colony that we're using here as an example, there were two categories of citizenship. Now, this is very interesting, brothers and sisters. One category of citizenship was called the assimilado, and the other one was called the indigena. One was called the assimilado, A-S-S-I-M-I-L-A-D-O, the assimilado, or an indigena, I-N-D-I-G-E-N-A, which is the same thing as indigenous. All right. Now, the word assimilado comes from assimilate, and to obtain this position in Angola, an African had to do the following. Now, the assimilado, of course, was the highest category that an African in his or her own country could have. In Angola and in Mozambique, or those Portuguese colonies, the highest status you could have was to be an assimilado. But in order to be an assimilado, you would have to speak the Portuguese language, attend Portuguese schools and be 18 years of age. And in order to acquire this position, Africans were required to submit an application. Listen, brothers and sisters, they were required to submit an application with a non-refundable fee. You had to apply to become an assimilado to the Portuguese in your own country. A Portuguese official visited the home of the applicant to determine if the applicant had a Portuguese or a civilized way of life. Such things as the cutlery you use at the table, meaning the forks and spoons. They looked at the forks and spoons that you used. They looked at the fact that you wore shoes or if you didn't wear any shoes and all kinds of things like that in order to make you an assimilado. Now, moreover, to acquire the assimilado position, one must invariably were required to be Catholic. You had to be Catholic. You had to wear shoes. You had to know what fork and spoon to eat with. You had to attend Portuguese schools, and you had to put your application in to become an assimilado. What you have happening, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in, Europeans going into Africa and making us become just like them. Now, that was one category under the Portuguese form of control in Africa called exploitation. Now, the next position that could be held was one called the indigena, which I just spell I-N-D-I-G-E-N-A. And that indigena category included those indigenous Africans who had never been to Portuguese schools and spoke Portuguese slightly or not at all. This included the vast majority of people in Angola. The indigenous held second-class citizenship and were required to carry ID cards wherever they went. Even on passenger trains, there were separate cars for the assimilados and the indigenous. Even though these were all black people, if you were an indigena, which means you hardly spoke any Portuguese at all, you might have eaten with the wrong fork and spoon, you didn't go to a Portuguese school, and you were not enough Portuguese, you were in a separate car on the train from the assimilado. So a huge gulf existed between the assimilados and the indigenous of Angola. In Angola, when a young boy was initiated into the Makanda, which means manhood, it was considered an important ceremony. In these ceremonies, there were traditional dances, circumcision, and discussions of tribal heritage and folklore. An assimilado would be angry. Now, the assimilado wouldn't like that. The assimilado would not like the indigena being initiated into manhood or ceremonies where you wore traditional dress, because remember, the assimilados were trying to be as closely as they could to being Portuguese. Now, I want you to think, to those who are listening, about us and our training in this country. The better off we could speak this man's language, the better off we were. The better we could speak his language, pardon me, the better off we were. Or are, I should say, the more we dress like him, walk like him, talk like him, and become white, the better we are in society. And it's the same thing that the Portuguese were doing in her colonies with the assimilados and the indigenous. An assimilado would be very angry if his or her son was initiated into these ceremonies that were based on indigenous African heritage. There are many blacks in this country who don't like. I remember when we were growing up, people would say, "What? Oh, you're being too black. You're not speaking the correct English. You're not acting right." They were trying to get us to become something other than what we are. You see, so the assimilados in the countries of Angola and in Mozambique and in her colonies were the same way. They get angry when a person was initiated into manhood or wore traditional clothing. And look at the conflicts that come about even today with hairstyles that the basketball players and the football players and that the entertainers and people in general are wearing. Take those styles that the brothers are wearing now in terms of locks swept over to the side, locks on top of the head, or and cut around the bottom of the head, and hair uncombed and hair without the processes that we used to wear. Anything that's African, we as people were taught to hate. Anything African, brothers and sisters, we are taught to hate. So this was the same as the Assimilados and the indigenous in Portuguese. And the last form that we're going to talk about, and we can talk more about this in the question and answer period, the last part that we're going to talk about is the policy of the Dutch in Azania or South Africa, and that was the system of apartheid. And when we discuss and when we understand the system of apartheid in South Africa, we'll find that the Dutch historically began its presence in South Africa in 1652 when they dropped anchor at Table Bay, South Africa, and the Dutch and their descendants were called Boers, which means farmer. As the frontier farmers or trek Boers moved eastward and wrested control of the land, they began to believe that it was indeed theirs. Like the old wagon trains in American Western stories, the Boers, or the Dutch, moved similarly with large families and stole cattle and homes from African people who were already there in Azania or in South Africa, you see. And they invaded the African people. And when we look at this system that the Dutch set up in South Africa, the system of apartheid, that word apartheid, to those who may be taking notes and who may not be familiar with this information, some say apartheid, but it's spelled A-P-A-R-T-H-E-I-D. A-P-A-R-T-H-E-I-D. And that word, that apartheid word, that word means apart, A-P-A-R-T, which means separate, and other H-E-I-D, hide, which means state or condition of. Apart, A-P-A-R-T, means separate, and H-E-I-D, which means the state or condition of. So the system of apartheid, which was the Dutch policy towards South Africa, meant separate or the condition or state of being separate is what apartheid means. So in that particular policy, Europeans and South Africa began to separate everything, white here, black there, and also meant that Africans were drawers of water and hewers of wood, and that they were totally inferior to Europeans. These laws resulted in Africans beginning to believe that they were inferior to the Dutch settlers. If you began to teach a person that they're inferior, a boy or a girl, and they began to hear it long enough, then they will grow up believing that they're inferior, or believe that they are nothing. And this is what the Dutch did. So much so that, as in other parts of the world where the European mentality prevails, the policy of apartheid was aimed at the continuation of white supremacy and the exploitation of the labor and natural resources of Africa. Now, as an example, textbooks were even written by the Dutch and used in South African schools, stating that Europeans were in South Africa before Africans. This is the way they wrote the books. The Dutch wrote that they were first in Africa, and the black folk were out of place in their own land. And this is similar to the usual lie that Europeans tell of having discovered territories that were inhabited by indigenous people long before their arrival. You see, so this was the system of apartheid in South Africa to keep everything separate and to make African people believe that they were superior. And like I said, that system of apartheid, of course, was so-called dismantled by de Klerk in South Africa around 1990-91 when Nelson Mandela came out of jail on Robben Island. But what you find out today, that even though that system of apartheid was dismantled and black people can go here, go there, go where they want to, go to school where they want to in South Africa, but still the resources, the diamonds and the gold and the De Beers land vast land resources are still owned by white people. The land and money in South Africa is still in the hands of white people, even though Africans are considered to be free. But now there are organizations in South Africa who are beginning to fight against that rule. For example, the African Freedom Fighters, the EFF, they're beginning to, young people, beginning to try to get back the land and the resources in South Africa, which Robert Mugabe did in Zimbabwe, the neighbor of South Africa. Mugabe came into power, which was under the same system of apartheid in Zimbabwe as it was in South Africa. Mugabe began to quickly, unhesitantly, take back the resources of the country of Zimbabwe when he came into power. And this is what Africans in South Africa are beginning to do right now and to understand. So those are the policies of white people towards black people in the continent, or on the continent of Africa. As we discussed my chapter, Early Missionary Explorers, there's most at the end of that chapter, and we'll finish it out for sure on next week. But just to go over real quick, the first policy that we discussed today of Africa, I mean of Europeans towards its African subjects, was indirect rule, which was employed by the British. The next policy that we discussed today was the policy of assimilation, which was the French form of government in her colonies. And the next one that we discussed was the policy of Belgium towards its colony in the Congo was paternalism. And the last that we discussed was the policy of exploitation by the Portuguese in Africa. And the last one that we discussed was the policy of apartheid in South Africa. You see, just to briefly go back over to those who might be taking notes. So with that, Brother Marvin, I'll give it back over to you as we discuss the way that Africans were ruled by Europeans today and some of the residue of that rule of Europeans, or those forms of rule by Europeans, is still around today in the minds of various citizens of Africa. So with that, Brother Marvin, Brother George, I give it back to you, and we can go to our phone lines, and maybe we got some new people that I turned on to the program who might have questions or comments to let us know they're listening. Thank you very much, brother. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, right. Dr. Bruce. Before you go, I got a quick question for you.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm sitting here for the rest of the show. We got another half hour, right?
You know, we're doing the Recapturing the African Mind series, right? Really digging into your book, and we're getting into the heart of it now. And you mentioned these policies or methods of control. For our listeners, why is this information so vital or so critical to our people?
All right. It's so critical to our people, Brother Marvin, so that our people can understand how it is and what caused us to become the way that we are today. If we know this history and then begin, which we have to do is know it first, and then when we know this history and then we begin to understand this history, it can help us understand ourselves as a people, how we relate to each other, how we get along with each other. It also helps us to understand how we as a people sometimes come into conflicts with each other today, and some of these conflicts and some of these arguments and some of the disparities that we have among each other is actually because of our history and our training here in America and Africa by our colonizers. You see, one thing that happened is that we in this country were put into a system of slavery, and on the African continent, people were put in a system of colonialism. But they both are really the same by different names, but they're really the same. For example, it's been said that before the system of apartheid was developed in South Africa, the South Africans or the Dutch actually studied what was going on in the States at the same time, and that's why they set up that system of apartheid in South Africa. But in the United States, it was just called segregation. But it's the same thing. You see, so when we begin to understand these systems that control us, then we can understand ourselves better and understand why we can even understand why when you go to a college in the United States and you become a Delta Sigma Theta, you can understand why you feel that you're better than the AKA when you understand what happened. When you understand this system of apartheid or segregation or assimilation and all this that we talked about that happened on the African continent actually happened in the United States of America, you can understand how we as people ended up as we are today, totally messed up, totally robbed of our minds, but it was because of the policies that were placed upon us by our conquerors, slave masters in this country, colonizers in Africa. This is what made us become the way that we are today. This is why we believe light skin is better than dark skin, which is Dr. Rogers and I talk about, and a lot of black folk don't want to deal with. You see, but we understand why it's considered better, because the colonizer in Africa and the slave master in America taught us that it was better. You see, why black children growing up, darker-skinned black children, use Natanola and bleach and glow and try to lighten their skin because they could fit better into the American society. You see, all this madness that we came into contact with, you see, that we don't even like to talk about, you see, but it's real. It exists. So this is important so that we can understand what happened. And once we get that understanding, we can eradicate this thinking and come back to our minds and understand that no matter who we are and what we look like, we are all a part of God's creation, and we are one people, and we need to exercise our abilities and to come together and to grow stronger as a people. And it's just so much so I hope that kind of answered your question why this is important. But anyway, go back to you. I'm thinking about a lot of things right now as we talked about. I was thinking about some other things, but go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. That's, you know, that's really a hard truth for us, right, to really look at the conditioning that we operate in and that we function in every day. So I would like to suggest that as we look at our people, as we function, we have to now believe and see the reality of the programming that's instilled in each individual within our community. So they're actually functioning out of the condition and not out of their own mind and their own will. It's a program.
Good point. Good point, Brother Marvin.
We have to acknowledge that.
We're not functioning out of our own minds today. We really are not functioning out of our own minds, you know. And I can, we all can think about it, even when we were down in school in elementary grades, and you know, we were just trained to be Negroes and to be as much like white people as we could. And this is why people sometimes condemn the young brothers and sisters, which I don't, who are rappers and who wear clothing and who wear the hair and certain hairstyle. At least they're trying to exercise their own thoughts and beliefs and to think on their own. But anyway, that's, you know, like I said, you might have some questions or comments from our audience, and I've been getting some texts today about people who are tuned in. I got a long text I got here from a brother named Shahid, and he'll probably call in. But anyway, let's go right here. So much to this, brother.
All right, well, let's get to the lines. I'm going to bring Brother George in. He'll be on standby as well. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, all right. Any comments before we go to the lines on this wonderful presentation that Dr. Bruce just gave us on recapturing the African mind?
Right at this moment, brother, not right now.
Okay. All right, let's go to the lines. Okay. All right, we're going to the lines now. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. That's the guest call-in line if you're interested in talking to myself, Brother George, Dr. Bruce, and I know Dr. Rogers is on the line as well. We'll bring him in just a few. 845-277-9250. We're going to the lines now. This is the process. I'm calling your last four numbers of your telephone number if you're on the call-in line, And all you have to do is say, hey, how you doing, Brother Marvin, Dr. Bruce? I'm calling from wherever you're calling from. Great show. Don't have much to say, but just want to say keep up the great work. So we want you listeners out there to be encouraging to Dr. Bruce and to this show and continue to motivate us today because this is African-American Empowerment. 5416. 5416. You're first. You're up next, and you're live on the Empowerment Show. Welcome to the show. How are you? Where are you calling from?
5416. That's me.
5416.
Yeah, I thought what I heard was awesome. I think every African-American black student person in this country needs to hear that. They need to be, and it needs to be taught continuously in our schools, from elementary school to middle school to high school. Can't get enough of what I've heard. It's your history is a part of you, and the more you know of it, the more you know of your true self, the more you can help yourself and your people. This is John Taylor. That's my comment for the day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening. Appreciate you. That's a good brother right there. All right. We're going over to 8502. I'm going right down the list. 8502, you're up next. Where you calling from? Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon, Brother Marvin, and good afternoon to Dr. Bridges. This is Herbie White in Durham, North Carolina. And I just want to say that it was a wonderful show, that along with all of those policies, the different what the French used and the English and the Dutch and the assimilation, all that, along with that went an extreme amount of violence.
Mm.
Extreme amount of violence to implement those policies. That's all.
All right. Thank you, Brother Herbie. You're exactly right. And, yep. You know, when you think about it, it seems so clean cut initially, but you brought that in so eloquently, is that everything was associated with that weapon of destruction to get control. All right. Thank you, Brother Herbie. I appreciate that. Wow, that's pretty good. All right, let's go on over to 5932. 5932, you're live and you're up next. Do you have a question, a comment? Where are you calling from? 5932.
Calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina. Enjoying the show, and it just shows how important our history is. We just got to keep it going and how it relates to things that are happening right today, the method and methodology. It's just so important that we learn this and keep teaching it to our children. And that's all I need to say. Bye.
All right. Thank you for calling. You're absolutely right, right? We need to educate our people. We do. Knowledge is power, and that education has to come from us. It's by us and for us, and we have to continue to do that work of working on ourselves. But we're going to have to do it. Nobody else is going to do it for us. So thank you for calling. Keep listening. Tell a friend. All right, let's go on over to 7841. 7841, you're up next. You're live, and you're on the Empowerment Hour with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Peace, this is Inubia, calling from Richmond.
Hey, Sister Inubia. Welcome to
hey.
The show.
Dr. Bridges blessed me with some information today that I bear witness to, but I never understood why. I have traveled to Africa, and I lived in certain places for different periods of time, but I never really understood why those black people in Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire and Gambia, why they were so indoctrinated into the French ways. It was amazing to me. Like, they weren't just speaking French like Africans speak English. Like, they were French. They acted French. They ate French foods. Like, it was very, very, it was weird when the first time I visited, like, I was in college, like, 1920, And I would tell people the strangest experience I had in Africa was watching these Africans pretend that they were French. And his explanation to the methodology of the French's intention in terms of how they were colonized with this assimilation concept is remarkable, because that's exactly, like, they did an excellent job with that, because it blew my mind how these French women, I mean, how these African women were walking around being French. It was amazing. I never saw anything like that.
You know, Brother Marvin and Sister Anubia, I don't know you, but I'm really glad you called to confirm through some of your real experiences what I'm saying and what I'm teaching and explaining on the air. You have actually seen it. I'm glad to hear that, and I hope our listeners are listening to this, because sometimes it's difficult to understand when you haven't seen it. But you've seen what I said, so you know it's true.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, even to the air of the, I don't know if anybody's been in France or been around French people or native French people, but even the air, like the way French people act, the Africans were acting French.
Exactly.
They were eating croissants, everything, the food and everything.
So you understood when I said, when I ran into the brother at the airport and he had a French pool, he was wearing Jordache jeans and everything French, eating French wine. Right. And you see, that was a policy of the French towards all of its nations that it conquered, to make these people become totally French, and they were successful. And I'm glad you're calling in, because to you, Brother Marvin and Brother George, I got a text, and it's kind of alarming, from a good friend of mine on my other phone, and I want to just read a little bit of this text to those who are tuned in. The brother, I'm glad, that's why I'm glad the sister came in and understands and appreciates what I'm saying. But a brother just texted me, and he said, I can't take too much time on this talk show, but it's like you are, all you are doing is intellectually masturbating all over the damn place. Without a womb to birth a child, implement the nation's standards. And then he said, that's totally, he's saying that what I was teaching and what you're saying, Brother Anubia, is totally, I'm reading his words from my text on the phone, it's totally too far off the masses' concept or perspective, and we don't have time to keep being philosophical and on the air. He said this is too far away. So, and I hope Dr. Rogers is on the phone too, because he mentioned something in our discussion on last week, that maybe sometimes we're too far above the heads of people and we're not making it clear, and that's what I really try to do. And this call, this text that I got on my other phone, brother said, we just intellectually masturbating here on your show, Brother Marvin, and we're too far above the heads of the masses of the people. So that's why I'm glad this sister called in. But anyway, I don't want to get upset. But anyway, that's a text that I got.
Don't you get upset, Dr. Bruce. You just keep teaching. Keep teaching. Sister Anubia, thank you for your clarity. And we continue to clean up the mess as we go forward. Bless that, brother. That's what we're going to do, Dr. Bruce. We're blessing them and educating them at the same time. Thank you, sister. We're going on to 8022. You know what to do. Question, comment, where you calling from? 8022. You're next.
Yes.
Welcome
good
to the
afternoon.
Show.
I have enjoyed the show so far, and there was some very good information. I happen to be the mother-in-law of Dr. Namdi Azikiwe's granddaughter, so we have a lot of African information, and I was happy to hear Dr. Bruce mention his name, as well as Nkrumé, who is also a very good friend of one of my friends from Ghana. So the information is awesome, and I would just say encourage you all to keep up the good work and keep educating the public. And those who, somebody said, bug their heads, they would catch up. That's not our concern, is to educate and continue to educate and educate even more. So great job.
Thank you, sister, for that comment. and you know, she made me think about something else too. About she mentioned the Dr. Nkrumah, and she mentioned Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe. She's a friend, the granddaughter of Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, who was the first president. I'm just repeating, he's the first president of Nigeria. But Kwame Nkrumah, before he came to America, just to give you an idea about how our minds were stolen as African people, he left Africa from his little small school in his village called Nkroful, Africa. And before he came to America, you have to stop in Europe. He had to go to London. And he said when he went to London, he had heard and read so much about London and his schooling and education in Ghana. He was walking around the city of London and looking up at the tall buildings and those kinds of things in awe of London. You see, these are the kinds of things that put into our minds, even in this country, with the monuments and with the statues and various other things that we were taught about in this country, with the Pikes Peak and Death Valley and all these kinds of the Washington Monument that we went to as safety patrol. All these kinds of things take away our minds and make us begin to look up to European people. And Dr. Nkrumah said that before he came to America, he was just in awe at what he saw in London, England, because this is what he was taught in his school in Ghana, West Africa. So I appreciate that call. All right, so go ahead, Brother Marvin.
All right, time is rolling. I'd like to thank the sister for calling in. And one thing for the listeners, if you're interested in sharing something, feel free to call in and share your perspective and points of view. We're all one family. We can talk and we can listen. All right, let's go on over to 1471. 1471, you're up next. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Hey, good morning. Good evening, brothers. How you doing?
Oh, Dr. Rogers, how you doing, my brother? I'm glad you're there. I need your help today, brother. I'm glad to hear from you. Did you hear that text I read?
Yeah, you took care of it. You took care of that business. And you know that... And one of the things that is so critical about what you were doing, our liberation, meaning the liberation of African-American people, is tied up into what is the condition of the continental Africa and what's going on in continental Africa. And we can never be free as a people if Africa is not free, you know, because we are connected to that land. We're not connected to this place. This is not our home. Our home is across the Atlantic. You know that. We all know that. And so what happens across the Atlantic has a lot to do with our liberation and our freedom. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see so much of that hostility, cruelty, and disrespect from the Euro world as it relates to the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So when you laid that out about the colonialist ideas and where it's coming from, and you know, I mean, that's right on target, because if that doesn't change, then we're not going to be able to do much either, because you have to be tied. John Henry Clark told you that. You have to be tied to land. And we're not tied to this land. This is not our land here. You know that? We know the history of this.
Right, right.
So I think that we have to begin to focus on that and find a way to work with our African brothers. And look at ways that we can navigate and begin to move into that system and work with them. And see, we're going to have to work with them. We're not going to go over there. We're not going to be able to go over there and take nothing. We've got to go work with them and become wholesome, become builders and investors, you know, just like we invest in this mess. Invest in the African stuff. So you were right, man. You were right in doing that. You know, that was real funny what you you said. The cab driver said it's too far.
But you look at the map. Africa's closer to Guadeloupe than France is.
Let me tell you what a brother told me. I was talking to him about Africa and asking what he would do over there. He said, "Well, you know, man, I don't know." He said, "Do they have food stamps and stuff over there?" You know.
Oh, boy, come on now, Doc.
I'm serious. That's what he asked me.
You know, but you know, you take me back too, Bill. When I was in about the fifth or sixth grade at Burton School, I never forget this. I don't know why it sticks in my mind, because that's been many years ago, as you well know. And those who know, fifth or sixth grade was a long time for me and for you too. But when I remember we had a speaker to come to Burton School in Durham, North Carolina, from Ghana, and Ghana had just become independent. So there was some ambassador, how the principal or whoever got him there, but he spoke to the whole school, and I'll never forget when the man from Ghana finished speaking about Ghanaian independence, and he talked about the new leader, Kwame Nkrumah, and he took questions and answers. And this is the truth. Now, I'll never forget this, because I remember who it was, which I won't call his name. He's a good friend of mine. But he asked a question at the end, and his question was not about the food stamp, but his question was, y'all got fire trucks over there? I mean, that's all he knew to ask. He said, y'all have fire trucks in Ghana. So it goes to show you how we had already been prepared for a lecture about an independent African nation, or what our mindset already was when it came to anything black or anything African. It's always
that's
negative.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
True.
I mean,
he said, y'all got fire trucks over there?
Yeah, and see, for us, you know, we were tied into that Tarzan stuff and all of that. You know, I mean, you know, when you go home, after you go to the Tarzan movie and come home, and you know how you want to play, the kids want to play, everybody
right.
wants to be Tarzan. Ain't nobody wanted to be the master.
That's and right, and we never wanted to be Tonto. We wanted to be the Lone Ranger, didn't we?
Wanted to be the Lone Ranger.
So it's really a mindset in this whole thing, man. They really took control of our minds in more ways than one. They really did. That's why young people standing up today and speaking out, like Colin Kaepernick and what he did, I mean, I have to applaud that, because they wiped us out, man. They really wiped us out mentally.
Great. That's right. But good job, Dr. Bridges. Good job, man. Good job.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. I'll keep you on the line.
Mark.
Go ahead.
Mark.
Yes.
I would like to ask Dr. Bridges, was there a system that we were the most successful with breaking with? You know, like how difficult was it for the countries that were the French-speaking, you know, under French rule? To break with the French rule.
That's a good question. As a matter of fact, that assimilation process that the French used, which I mentioned before, with the policies from France to make the prime mover of the colony, had to be European culture. Assimilation is very difficult. As the sister, I can't think, Aniba, I hope I'm probably mispronouncing the name, but she talked about she's seen it in Africa, and other people who have been in Africa have seen it in French-speaking Africa. It's very hard to break because people have become totally French, and I saw it when I went to Guadeloupe. The same thing, they become French in all ways. Now, the Portuguese, in terms of their policy of assimilation, assimilados in making indigenous in Mozambique and Angola, they said that the Portuguese were the harshest of all of the colonizers. The most harsh towards its African subjects was considered to be Portugal, because when you look at Portugal and its geographic size, it's a small country, not having almost no resources. So for them to now have access to gold and diamonds as they did in Angola and Mozambique and southern African countries, for them to have access to these resources, they didn't know how to act. They was totally exploitative of the labor, the land, and the resources of Africa, not having anything in Portugal, so they tried to rape and rob. And also, the Portuguese colonies were the last to become independent from the colonizers, because the Portuguese form of oppression was so terrible towards African people. And by the way, a news item here, which relates directly to what we're talking about. We like to be timely here on this subject, on this program. Eduardo Dos Santos just passed, I think, yesterday. He was the president of independence during the time, I mean, from Angola. He just passed. Dos Santos. Yes, sir. So he just passed at about 79 years of age or something like that. But I just mentioned that because Brother George mentioned the harshest were the Portuguese. And we don't have to talk about apartheid in South Africa, how that was harsh to the African people. Now, indirect rule by Ghana was not quite, if you can say, as bad as say, Portugal's strategy towards its colonists. You see, so there was variation in terms of who was harshest, and the reasons why was because of the colonizers.
All right, we'll try to get one more in before we wrap up for today.
I got another text here. Said, okay.
All right. We're going over to 0946. You're live. Do you have a question or comment? All right, let's move on down to 5347. Last call for today, 5347. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce or Dr. Rogers or Brother George?
Hey, brothers, I was just listening, man. I turned on late to you guys, man. But hey, hey to all you guys. It's Brother Reg.
Hey, Brother Reg, it's nice to know you here. Nice to know you listening.
No doubt about it, man. Keep up the good work, fellow.
All right. Thank you, brother. All right. That's
hopefully
it for the call line.
Right. Okay. And hopefully we had some of those other people that tuned in. I sent you some new callers today. I met a brother this week, and a brother out of Raleigh, North Carolina, Brother Horace, and some other brothers I gave some numbers to, but maybe they listened on the computer. But thank you very much, Brother Martin, for having me, and I hope you did get something out of the lecture that I gave, and hope it helps understand our condition better. And hopefully it wasn't too far above the heads of our listeners. We don't want to do that, and we don't want to be involved in an intellectual masturbation like we were just accused of. That's not what we're trying to do here. And we look forward to Dr. Rogers on next week.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Brother George, do we have Dr. Rogers next week?
Brother George?
I'm trying to,
We'll have a discussion about that. Right, we want people to tune in. It's going to be good either way. It's going to be good either way, no matter
who's on
the African-American Empowerment Program. It's going to be good either way.
I like that. All right, Dr. Rogers, are you there? We're going to have a closing comment from you, then Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and then I'll wrap it up. Dr. Rogers, closing comment, sir.
Okay, real quickly, I think that we've got to continue on this line of discussion because this is the critical part. This is the part that will lead to understanding the necessity of liberation for us as a people. So you're on the right track. You've got to keep continuing.
All right. And what's that number to your show, Dr. Rogers?
Area code 215-490-9832. Every Tuesday evening, 8 o'clock Eastern time.
All right. Y'all tune in. Black Reality Think Tank. You can't beat it. All right. Dr. Bruce.
Every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, to those who might have missed what Dr. Rogers said, because what we're trying to do is get listeners for both these programs, both these learning experiences. Tuesday night, 215-490-9832. Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, the Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And I want to say my last comment is that the greatest win in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. That's powerful, but it's also absolutely true. Brother George, closing comments.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say it was another enlightening show for me. I learned a great deal from Dr. Bridges today, something that I had no knowledge of at all, and once again, you come through in flying colors for teaching me some new stuff that I had no idea about. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. And this is how great God is, the creator of the universe. WC is your higher power. Sister called in and verified what Dr. Bruce is teaching us, right? she clearly stated she saw it for herself. We have to understand how conditioned we are. And I want you to be able to ask yourself about the things that you now do, the things that you like doing, the things that you think about, the things that you prefer. Are they yours or have they been given to you? And do they support you as an individual? Do they support your likeness? Do they support your confidence in yourself, your likeness, your lips, your hair, your skin color, the beauty that you are? Do your ideas about yourself when you look in the mirror support who you are as an individual? And if you look in the mirror and love what you see, then you're on your way to personal liberation. We have to recondition ourselves to understand how important it is to control ourselves, control our minds, be able to treat each other with respect and dignity, to continue to coalesce and use information as tools for success and empowerment. But most of all, we have to be able to recondition ourselves to get back to loving who we are just as we are. Education is the key, and knowledge is power. This is African American Empowerment. It's 365 days of y'all. We ain't going to stop until it's over. Peace and blessings.
To be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to
African American empowerment. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.